United, and it feels so good. We are here with a special fastest 40 minutes in podcasting tonight. You know, it was halfway through July. You didn't get any brass bonanza in June. And we felt it was only right to at least give you a little bit over the summer here. So it is Seth and I, the beef and the boy, to talk about, well, whatever we want to talk about. I guess we'll talk about the Mizzou's greatest win ever competition, or since Triple Play corrected me, Mizzou's greatest football win ever. We'll have him fill out the baseball win bracket. Hi, Seth.
I was going to say reunited and it feels kind of hot and sticky, but that's just me. Yep.
1 minute in and... Okay.
Derail.
Okay. Well, We you know, the other topics we can cover, Seth, we'll have an all-sports report later. We could talk about preseason football, but we really need to save that, because otherwise we won't have anything to talk about in late August.
Wait, what, we haven't talked about preseason football on the website yet?
Not in a podcast form.
Oh.
See, there's a complete difference there. It's a completely different delivery. It hits the senses different.
Says you.
Yeah, well, that says me. Okay, so let's just start reminiscing here. We can go through the 32-win bracket that is the Mizzou's greatest win in football history thing. And you know what? I think it's actually better that we haven't won a national title for the purposes of this bracket, because otherwise the answer would be even more obvious than the clear winner that is going to be, well, the clear winner in this one.
You know what? We on this website have had some surprises in the past.
That is true.
A number of surprises. Every time we do one of these, we have some surprises.
If Justin Safford's entire family logs onto the same computer, crazy things can happen.
And hey, you know what? Brian Smith pulled it out too against the living legend Norm Stewart. So I'm not ready to put this one in the coffin and nail it shut quite yet.
Except technically Norm also won, because I'm a big pansy.
You are kind of a pansy.
I don't like it when people yell at me.
That because I was out of town.
Yeah, you're the enforcer. I was alone and I failed. Okay, so barring surprises, I think everybody has their opinion of who the clear winner of this is, but it doesn't really matter right now because we have 31 matchups to go, 30 after today. I figure we can walk through the regions. Clearly, when we're talking about this, most of the conversations will be about these more recent games that we actually either were in person for or watched on television, as opposed to, you know, the 1968 Gator Bowl was a huge win, but we don't really have anything to say about it because we weren't there. We weren't a gleam in our father's eyes yet.
Well, I don't know what your father thought about, but, you know.
Well, actually, at that point in time, he was at least thinking about my mother, so there's that. But I was still 10 years away. All right, so let's go ahead and start with the region where we can actually share firsthand knowledge, as with just about everybody else who has any firsthand knowledge of Mizzou. That would be the 2000s region. We skewed this toward recency just for conversation's sake, and it's going to pay off in this podcast. Today's matchup was matchup number one, 2003 Mizzou, Nebraska, 41-24 Mizzou, versus 2007 Mizzou, Arkansas, the Cotton Bowl, 38-7 Mizzou. I guess we'll start with the obvious one. Seth, what do you remember about 2003?
You know, I was certainly guilty of hyping 2003 up in my head more than I have most games in my Mizzou history. You know, I've opined before about how the 1997 game was really the first true college football game that I had ever been to, and kind of the indelible mark that left on me through the rest of my life. And then certainly recall the 1999 game where we really thought we had them, and then went ahead and kept snapping the ball over the punter's head, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah.
And then 2001, which was a really strange game that I don't remember anything from the game itself except for the long touchdown run.
Yeah.
But I also remember that that was the game, our first home game after 9/11, so that colors my memory more of that game than anything that actually happened on the field.
And the fact that there was an all-night tailgate for that game and bad things happened.
That's why I don't remember a whole lot about that game. Because things happened to me before the game that were painful, and things happened to me after the game that were funny, i.e. me falling asleep at a stop sign driving uphill. But 2003, I remember I couldn't even get out of my car, and I needed to calm myself down a little bit because I had really built things up. Some of that is in part due to a very good friend of ours who is from Nebraska originally, who hates Nebraska more than I would say you and I put together, and for good reason. And so when things finally broke our way, I remember just certain moments in the game. I remember the rainstorm in the first quarter and second quarter. I remember jumping up off of the benches that we were standing on when Kinney sacked Jamal Lord.
Yeah.
And I remember jumping, and I must have just been at a loose point on the bench because I remember jumping in the air and being in the air and having the thought of, I should have landed by now. And then finally coming down, of course, the famous fake field goal, which you probably tell that story better than I do because you didn't actually watch it, but your memory, I believe, is more of me than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, we oh, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
So. Okay. Yeah, it is funny. Like, for a long time, I think it's maybe a little bit less so now, although being that we're hosting Nebraska on a Thursday night, it's sure to be memorable once again. But through my first 12 years in Columbia, it seemed like the entire football season, like the pivot point in the season was the Nebraska game. It was, if anything was going to be memorable that year, it was Nebraska. And part of that is because my freshman year was, of course, 97 when all that happened. But more than any other game I do remember, it was just a quest. You know, they had already lost, 18 straight, I guess, when I got to Columbia. I lost 18 straight to Nebraska. But it was just a quest as far as this is the year. This is the year. Didn't do it in 97, went up in 98. This is the year we beat them, and we're going to do it in Lincoln. Count of Monte Cristo is going to lead Nebraska to the win. 99, it was definitely our year, and yeah, we snapped two punts over the punter's head in the first 5 minutes of the game, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was about 16-0 before we could even, you know, understand what was going on. 2000 was the Kirk Farmer breaking his collarbone after showing a glimpse of a Kirk Farmer we didn't know existed. 01 was the all-night tailgate and the post 9/11 tribute, and being that I had been drinking and awake for about the last 12 hours at that point, first play of the game, I try to yell, my stomach cramps up and I don't make a sound the rest of the game. 02 was, this is the year we're going to beat them. We've got Brad Smith now, and we got stomped.
Yes.
And so that, yeah, that led to 03, where from the Smith to Outlaw to Smith throwback touchdown pass in the first half, all the way to the end of the fourth quarter where we're down 20, or the end of the third quarter, we're down 24-14, and I'm having to call a friend of mine to give her updates because she's at a wedding, really a wedding that I was kind of supposed to be at too. Sorry, Jen. And I'm saying we're down 10, but you know what? It just feels like we're still going to win this game. And sure enough, first play, the fourth quarter, Brad Smith goes for a touchdown. James Kinney with the greatest sack I've ever seen in person, just separating Jamal Lord from the ball. And then, of course, the fake field goal where, you know, we're down 24-21. Lining up for the field goal, I kind of had a little tradition of not watching free throws during basketball games, and I could not watch this free throw, so I turned around, and I hear good old Seth's voice cracking as he says, "Oh, they faked it!" And I turn around just in time to see Cisse catch the touchdown pass. And, yeah, after that, it was just bliss for about 30 or 45 straight minutes the rest of that fourth quarter.
I remember that fourth quarter. If you look at the statistics, I still don't know, even for as good as some of the quarters we put up in 07 or 08 as the offensive juggernaut that we were, I don't know that there's ever been a statistically more dominant quarter than the fourth quarter, because they lost 20-odd yards in that quarter.
And we put up like 200,
obviously scored you know, 20 odd points, whatever, you know, whatever it was, and just really ran it up on them in the later stages of that game.
Yeah, the only other quarter I can think of that compares would be the 07 against Colorado. I think that second quarter was like 28-0 or something. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was a perfect quarter. It was a fourth quarter against Nebraska. And I mean, that was just, you know, it was in the middle of an 8-4 season. Like, for the season, it didn't mean a whole lot, but just, like, it was a moment for the fans, and it was just something that's going to be hard to top in this tournament, I think, even though, yeah, we had all these important games in 07, 08, but this game in the middle of an 8-4 season, I think, meant more to Missouri fans just to actually, you know, they're 24-year-olds that had never seen Missouri beat Nebraska at that point, and, it was something else. At this rate, by the way, we're on pace for about a 200-minute podcast.
We're going to have to rein that in a bit.
Yeah, luckily I don't think we'll have as much to talk about the 1942 game against Iowa pre-flight.
I thought we were only doing just the one bracket.
I'll run through them real quick, but yeah, most of this is 2000s. All right, so the opponent today, and clearly it looks like 03 Nebraska is going to win this one at this point in time, unless, I don't know, Tony Temple's family all logs on tonight and casts a bunch of votes, because it is going against 07, or the 08, excuse me, Cotton Bowl, where Missouri couldn't throw, Chase Daniel had a terrible day, and Missouri won by 31 points.
Good times in Dallas, that's all I remember.
Yeah, no, it was a great trip all around, lots and lots of shiner to be had.
Yep.
And
Funny story about you riding down in our car for 10 hours with the seat heater on, and you not knowing it.
I just thought the sun was really, really hot. I wasn't even drunk.
Yeah,
that was just me. I only have an excuse. That was awful. But your wife still giggles about that, so I guess, you know.
Very much so.
There's that. No, this was just domination. Like, it was relatively close early. Tony Temple looked really good in the first half, but we didn't know what was in store. They missed a couple field goals. They ran a fake field goal, but the coach had called timeout. But since the fake had worked, they tried to run another fake afterwards. And predictably, it didn't work. The second half was just a whooping. They had like one sustained drive in the second half, and it was easy. Tony Temple, William Moore all over the field. It was just a really, really nice way to cap a top five season. I don't even know what else to say. It was a nice win. It was more important to the season, but 03 Nebraska was 03 Nebraska. So it looks like that game's going to win. The next game, the next matchup, I should say, up tomorrow, is 07 Mizzou, Illinois versus 08 Mizzou, Nebraska. So, Seth, I was in Minnesota for 07 Mizzou, Illinois. Strangely enough, that's where your parents live, and I was there for another reason. And tell me about what you remember about that game.
You know, that was the coming out party of Jeremy Maclin, and that certainly is a seminal moment in Mizzou history. I had been there in 2002 for the coming out party of Brad Smith, and this one kind of had a little bit of a different feel because Brad Smith really came out of nowhere. Maclin, you were forced really to believe the hype, and certainly he delivered. Obviously, as well, we kind of saw the new birth of the new Mizzou offense. But for me, I most remember just the end of that game and Mizzou just barely hanging on, some questionable calls at the end of the game, and the crowd, I don't know that I've been as tired after a game as I was from that one, because, you know, for a long time, Mizzou was just up, and Illinois just kept hanging around and hanging around, and obviously, you know, the big play at the end of the game, I think probably William Moore, if I recall correctly, either him or Pig Brown, one of the two of them made the pick in the end zone.
Oh, yeah, that was Pig. That was the Pig Brown game entirely.
Yeah, so I just remember walking out of that game, and unfortunately for me, the end of the game almost ended up overshadowing the rest of the game, which was, as we can look back on it now, just, you know, as we said, the birth of the Jeremy Maclin era, however short, at Mizzou, just how impressive he was in that debut.
Yeah, I think there are two ways to look at the Mizzou-Illinois game. I mean, number one, you know, clearly a couple plays in the third quarter, and we win that game about 44-13, and, you know, we probably go on to the same type of season we had regardless. But the other way to look at it was that Missouri needed to know it could win a game like that. And, you know, that somebody was going to step up and make plays when it counted. And it was in a horrible fashion. You know, the we were up 37-13 and we're about to blow the lead. You know, if we had a lost by one, we would have been talking about where Gary Pinkel did the math wrong and went for two instead of kicking the extra point, and we lost the point. I mean, there were so many things that could have, well, that did go wrong, and that would have cost Missouri in the past, but they figured out a way to win. And, you know, as Ross worships at the church of Pig Brown, this is the reason why. You know, recovering the first fumble, recovering the second fumble, then not only stopping an Illinois touchdown, but then returning it for a touchdown of his own, and then picking off the pass at the end. It was just, without Pig Brown's performance in that game, you know, who the hell knows what happens to 2007. So,
yeah,
that was just a relief as much as anything. But yeah, that was definitely exhausting from top to bottom, and I wasn't even there. Okay, so 2008 Nebraska, on the other hand.
Ooh, man, that was exhausting, but for other reasons. I think I was drunk.
Really?
I think I just kept drinking that night.
Well, the game was over halfway through the second quarter, so
I wasn't drinking because of the game. Those weekends when we play in the evening, it's, you know, I do laundry and watch
college football.
And drink. That may have been one of those days where I just was drinking all day long.
Yeah, that was, you know, third play of the game, Jeremy Macklin takes the pass, 60 yards for a touchdown or something like that. Nebraska responds with a couple decent drives, but once we shut them down once, it was done. And I was, you know, there was one demon left to exercise after beating Nebraska after the long streak, beating K-State after the long streak, winning at Colorado so bad. There's one demon left that was winning in Lincoln for the first time since I was a month old, and needless to say, they did it.
Yeah.
52-10 after three quarters. So that's kind of a different, yeah, the Illinois game was stressful. The Nebraska game was a big party. I'll be interested to see who actually gets the most votes in that one. They're great for different reasons. All right, third matchup, 05 Independence Bowl. I don't know. 05 Independence Bowl versus 07 Missouri-Nebraska 41-6 at Faurot Field.
Yeah. Boy, that, you know, that one for me is tough. The 05 Independence Bowl, I as some on the board might know, was at the, I guess it was the 03 Independence Bowl.
Yeah.
And don't have great memories of that, not because we lost necessarily, but just because, let's say I don't have great memories of that. But the 05 Independence Bowl for me was more about the occasion than it was the game. It was, you know, over the Christmas break, holiday break, my wife was working, and I ended up being invited over to my eventually to be in-laws to watch the game with my eventually to be father-in-law. And so there was just a little bit of awkwardness as the game went on. You know, obviously South Carolina gets out to that huge start, and, you know, having to kind of talk him down a little bit. He's a Mizzou fan because both of his kids went to Mizzou, and he's from, actually he's not even from Missouri, but he's lived in the state a long time. And so kind of talking him down a little bit, and then not even paying too much attention as the game wore on and into the third quarter, them coming back and really, you know, us getting into the game. It was an amazing effort. You know, we hear about the legend of Mother Rucker perhaps being born that game in terms of the halftime speech that he gave. And hopefully, you know, that is something that, you know, other players from that team and from that era certainly will remember. As for the 07 game, just that's the best home game I've ever been to for an entire day, for an entire experience. That is the absolute best for me. The 8 p.m. game, the weather being perfect, we tailgated for over 8 hours. We had two meals out there, came back into the parking lot at midnight, tailgated again for another 2 hours. It really was the best game day total experience I've ever had.
Yeah, I mentioned 08 Nebraska being a party, but that was a party in person. That was just the game was over 5 minutes in. You know, Missouri marches right down and scores. William Moore obliterates Marlon Lucky on that screen pass.
I hope our fans latch on to this. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I hope our fans latch on to that. Really, that game really could be the birth or even the rebirth of Mizzou. And it's going to take a number of years for that fact to really come about. But you look at the change in the atmosphere in the game, the change in the environment, the all gold in the crowd, the students, the fans finally realize, you know what, it's all right, it's cool to wear gold. And that is something from that game on, you've certainly seen a huge uptick in gold in the stadium. and really a change and a step towards, you know, a national type program that really you can trace right back to that game specifically.
And that's an interesting tie because, I mean, that really was, yeah, you think of the traditions that continued through 08, a lot of it started right there. So you have the rebirth of Mizzou versus staving off death against South Carolina.
Yeah.
Just seeing Mike Alden's history, you know, he wasn't going to fire Gary Pinkel if they lost that game. But they were going to lose a lot of fans. Like, I got a text message near halftime from our late great friend Jeffrey saying the bar he was in, they were all chanting Gary Barnett. Oh. Which
I love Mizzou fans.
In the moment, Iraq, well, let's put it this way, it was such a bad moment there in the first half that even I was saying, you know, I'm not calling for Pinkel to get fired, but at this point I wouldn't be able to complain if it happened. And that's pretty huge for me because it was just embarrassing. You know, they were just laid down for South Carolina that first quarter and a half.
Oh, Sidney Rice made a career out of that first half.
Well, and whatever that running back's name was, he did too. It was just, I mean, it was total domination. It was 21-0.
He could have made that good of a career if we can't remember his name.
Yeah, true. Well, but if they had won,
sure.
I don't know. Yeah, it's 21-0 halfway through the second half. They're driving to make it 28-0, and all hope is lost. And really, as good a play as Marcus King made, Blake Mitchell threw an awful pass. Like, yeah. You watch Zoo Dave's video, which, by the way, Zoo Dave, exclusive on Rocket Nation. Hi, Dave.
Wow.
Sorry. If you watch that video, the dude he was trying to throw it to was, like, triple covered, and he underthrew it. But regardless, it takes a play like that. You need a break. And, you know, King weaves his way 100 yards for a touchdown. They go right down and score again. But then, you know, Brad Smith rises off the canvas, throws to Rucker and Franklin and then Kaufman for the touchdown right before half. We go down and immediately look like we're going to make it 28-21, and except we have to settle for a field goal and miss it from like 19 yards.
Yeah.
And it looks like all hope's lost again, except they just keep coming back and keep coming back. And then Adam Crossett, after missing a 20-yarder, makes a 50-yarder for the lead. And, of course, the play I'll always remember Brad Smith for, even more than any Nebraska play or anything else. You know, looking for an open receiver, not finding one, kind of jumping around in the middle of the field, and then just bursting to the outside, setting up the game-winning touchdown.
I'll still remember the 2002 Oklahoma play.
Yeah, that's true, too. Where we hugged each other and said, yes, we're still going to lose! Yeah. But, I mean, just, it wouldn't have been the end of the Gary Pinkel era by any chance, but I just cannot imagine the amount of the complete lack of enthusiasm that would have been carried over into 06 if we'd gone out and lost, you know, 48-14 or something.
Yeah.
And maybe they would have done everything the same the last 3 years, no matter what, but it would have been a lot harder to get people sold on the idea of Mizzou football. So, I mean, that saved the program in some ways, and it's all speculation, but big wins. And then we've got the last two games of the region, 2007 Missouri-Kansas at Arrowhead versus the underdog 2005 Missouri 27, Iowa State 24.
Ah, yes, homecoming in old Missouri. you know, that one's going to be a funny one. It kind of gets it's obviously going to get a tough draw here.
Yeah.
That game symbolically, you know, from an aesthetics point of view, nothing really fancy about that game. I mean, you have to love the fourth quarter kind of comeback. And I guess the irony that Chase Daniel never led a comeback,
yeah,
except for the Alamo Bowl in his last start, with the exception of this game here, which obviously he didn't start, you know, was platooning still with Brad Smith at that point. This game is going to be more symbolic and one of those games that you know, a Mizzou fan who was there can kind of look back and crack a little wry smile and just go, yeah, we caught a break that day, maybe. 2007 game, there's not much really to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, neither of us were actually at that game, strangely enough.
It was a game where I'll be honest, I had the opportunity to go. It was something that the tailgate queen and I had discussed. She not being a fan of cold weather, that certainly weighed heavily on her decision. By not being a huge fan of how stupid Mizzou and KU fans are around one another, and that certainly detracts for me. And I know that I may be very much in the minority of how much it detracts for me, but you know, we made the decision that we didn't want to go, and I think we're both okay with it. Because for me, that game, in just a small, small way, would have ended up being a little bit like the Missoula-Illinois game of 07 that we talked about, where I think the comeback at the end, you know, for me being in person, would have just ruined that game just a hair, and more certainly than it deserves to be ruined at all. All credit certainly to Kansas for how they played us in that fourth quarter and got back into the game. I hear great stories of many of my friends who were there, and that game is what it is.
Yeah, well put. Yeah, I think as far as 07 goes, I didn't have a direct opportunity to go, but clearly I could have purchased a ticket. We were in Oklahoma City as of that morning. We got up real early, hustled back. I sat down, watched the DVR game day, and then basically I'd gotten like 3 hours sleep the night before. I tried to just go to sleep. It was like, I don't know, 3 o'clock or something. And my dog is shuffling around here in the background trying to take the place of our angry vocal cat. But it was just, I couldn't sleep. Like, it was just, that was an experience. Instead of being around 80,000 people, half of whom hate the other half, I just kind of wanted to watch that game curled up in a ball on the floor in our basement. Because it was just, my whole life I rooted for Missouri even before I really got here, and they were terrible, and it was just a culmination, not me personally, but a lot of fans, it was just a culmination, holy crap, we can actually be number one, this might never happen again, and it was an exhausting game, but I, thinking back on it, I probably remember more specific plays from that game than just about any other game I've ever seen, and I wasn't even there.
And that's funny, because I remember very little specific of that game.
But yeah, that game, other people have waxed poetic. Our buddy Dave, in fact, has waxed extremely poetic about that game. And I think people, Mizzou fans from the Kansas City area, needed to be there and experience it. The 05 game, clearly fighting an uphill battle here in round one, but it's kind of funny, like, the 07 game, it's said now, the 05 Independence Bowl, without that game, maybe not, the next 3 years doesn't happen. Well, without the 05 Iowa State game, we don't get the 05 South Carolina game.
Yeah.
And even though we wouldn't have won without Brad Smith in the Indy Bowl, we wouldn't have won with him. It took him getting hurt and Chase Daniel breathing life into the offense to come back and win that game and eventually, just narrowly get to 6-5. And Doc, what are you doing?
All right.
Boy, she's getting
while
restless.
Bill tends to the dog, we're going to go speed round style through the other three brackets.
Okay, I'm back.
Clock in front of me, I feel that we're already doing quite well on time.
Yeah, we're good. I won't even reveal what minutes we're at here. All right, real quick, the next region, 1976 to 2000. First game on the list is 76 Mizzou, 46 USC 25. And versus, because this region is so big and had so few wins in it after about the early 80s, the 98 Insight Bowl.
Without my reading up on it, I'd probably be going to the Insight Bowl. But that Insight Bowl is really an end of an era, which I don't know if that is makes it a great win or not.
Yeah,
I know. Now, if that game was 5 minutes longer, we'd have lost, too.
Yeah. Well, it was the end of an era. Looking back, these games take on a different meaning depending on what came next. But both of these games really were standalone events. You in 98, winning the Insight Bowl, feeling really good. And then 99, the bottom falls out of the program. 76, the craziest year in the history of Missouri football. Beat USC in Southern California. Beat Ohio State in Ohio. Beat North Carolina, who ended up being like 9-3 that year. Lose to Illinois, go 6-5. It was just the strangest year. And it's anytime we think of the entire 70s, we think about, they beat the good teams, couldn't beat the bad teams. It's 76 encapsulated the whole season. But yeah, that was Southern Cal's only loss that year. Whooped them 46-25 at their place. Just looked outstanding. Injuries caught up with them, and they ended up not doing as well that year. But both of those were. Well, you know what? They were great wins, and that's why they're, et cetera. The next matchup, 1978, Mizzou 35, Nebraska 31. The last time Missouri would beat Nebraska for a solid 25 years. Versus 1996, Mizzou 42, Kansas 25.
I have a piece of the 96 goalpost, so I'm probably going to have to vote that way.
That was, 78 was kind of, that was another season where, you lose to Ohio, Oklahoma State and Colorado. start the year beating Notre Dame, end the year beating Nebraska, both on the road again. I do have a DVD copy of that game, and it is just, it was cold, they were hitting hard, it was all on the ground aside from some passes to Kellen Winslow, and it's just a dogfight. It got Missouri into a bowl that year. They ended up going to the Liberty Bowl, beating LSU. It was just a great game to watch. 96, you can speak to that a little bit more. That was kind of Corby Jones' coming out party if he hadn't already had it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was 2 4-6 teams playing one another. And, you know, 95 was my first year. We went 3-8. 96, us going 5-6. That was quite an improvement over what we had done the previous years. And on the piece of goalpost that I have, it says the corner has been turned. I don't know if that was something that Larry Smith actually said, or the media just made up, or I just made up. But, you know, it was something that left the Mizzou crowd and, you know, the fan base excited for the next year, where they hadn't really carried a lot of excitement over in years past. And yes, certainly Corby, you know, the stories about him are always, you know, another thing that kind of bring a smile, a chuckle to your face. You know, you hear about him losing to Ernest Blackwell in a 40-yard dash where Blackwell was wearing construction boots, but very few people could catch Corby, and certainly nobody on Kansas in 1996 could. He'd run the option, catch the edge, and he was gone. And it was the first time I had ever stormed the field for a win. I did in high school for a tie, and that's kind of embarrassing. I'm not sure why I'm saying that, but it was fun. It was fun to be there that day, all maybe 40,000 of us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I heard about in the offseason leading into 97 was how great that KUN was and how great we were going to be in 97. Then we turn right around and lose to Kansas at the beginning of 97.
Yeah, but man,
it ended up working out. So, all right, the third matchup in that region, 1978, Mizzou 3, Notre Dame nothing.
Man, this is an unbelievable matchup right here.
Yeah, Joe Montana being shut out by Missouri versus the opposite of a 3-0 game, Mizzou 51, Oklahoma State 50, 1997.
I mean, weren't you born on the Mizzou Notre Dame 3-0 game?
My mom went into labor that day, and my mom's OB, because she went into labor a month early, their doctor was in South Bend.
Oh.
And
well, I could see why your mom would go into labor a month early. You do have a huge head.
I'm telling you. Anyway.
God, that 97 game, I remember watching that on television. I was actually in Kansas City on a work-related trip, and that was an early morning game. I think it was an 11 o'clock game or 11:30, and you just couldn't believe it if you had seen it, leading all the way down to the last play of the game with the attempted swinging gate by Oklahoma State for the two-point conversion, maybe the dumbest single play call in history against Missouri. And we won 51-50, and that really made you feel good about where this team could potentially go.
Yeah, that was a very good month for Missouri, beating Colorado, beating Texas, beating Oklahoma State. I was actually in Oklahoma for that game. I was not at the game. I was at a girlfriend's cross-country meet that day.
Wow.
And we found out
I was embarrassed about rushing the field for a tie.
Yeah. Our buddy Walsh and I were in Oklahoma City. So he should feel even worse. He wasn't even there for a girlfriend. He just came to tag along.
Walsh isn't here, so it's just embarrassing for you.
Correct. Sure. We found an Oklahoma State fan at the cross-country meet who was listening to the game. We had seen that we were up, whatever, 30-6 or something at near halftime. Listened to most of the fourth quarter and overtime in this random dude's van, which
that's just creepy.
Any story with the words "this random dude's van" doesn't usually turn out well. This one did, because we had to listen to a Mizzou win, and Bill Teagans at that moment, the late great Bill Teagans,
God bless him,
solidified his God. What is it with animals in this room?
Is somebody remixing our show?
The dog is digging into the chair to get herself comfortable. I have to figure she's going to stop soon. Anyway, Bill Teagans, towards the end of the game, every time Missouri scores, he just gets so disgusted that his voice trails off. So all I hear is, you know, in overtime, Jones turns upfield to the 2015th, and everybody's going to score a touchdown. And then on the swinging gate play to end the game, all you hear is, good Lord, dog, all you hear is swinging gate formation, Jones even going to be stubborn, is everyone involved. And we just looked at each other, we're like, wait, did we win? Bill Tegan was the greatest emotional homer sportscaster of all time. Just fantastic. So, those you can't get more different than Mizzou Notre Dame and Mizzou Oklahoma State, but they were both great wins. Which leads us to the last game. I'll start talking louder. The last game of the region is actually another 76 versus 98 game. You have the second huge road upset of 76, Mizzou 22, Ohio State 21, where they pulled an Oregon State from the 2006 Sun Bowl, went for two and got it, versus 98, the Devin West game, basically, where Devin West ran for, what was it, 794 yards against Kansas?
796.
Oh, right.
Final, yeah. And again, for me, for my frame of reference, I'm going to have to probably go that game, but only because, not so much for the win, but for the individual performance.
Yeah, he really, it was just, the blocking was...
I'd say not so much the individual performance, but the performance of the six people in that game, Devin West plus the offensive line.
Yeah, they were just the holes. Devin West, no offense to him, he was great, but I could have run for 175 yards that day. The holes were gigantic, including that famous end zone picture where he's breaking loose for that final touchdown, and there's almost nobody else in the screen. It looks like he's running down the field by himself. Just a great performance. It is another game that we both were attending.
Though not together, because you didn't like me.
That's right. I hated Tiger's Lair at first. Silly me. And now we sponsor Tiger's Lair. So hi, kids.
Hey, kids.
All right, so that leads us to the last... that leads us to the next region. Excuse me.
No, we got to go super speedy here.
Yeah. Well, we already that one. We cut the time of that one down by about three times. We'll do the same now. But
this is great because none of us were at any of these games, and I know nothing about any of them. So,
all right. Well, here, let's
just read them.
Okay, speed round for real. Okay, 63-75 region. First matchup is 1962 Blue Bonnet Bowl, 14-10 over Georgia Tech versus 1975 Mizzou 20 Alabama 7.
I'm going to go with the Blue Bonnet Bowl because I believe my father, when he worked for Standard Brands, helped come up with the slogan, everything's better with Blue Bonnet on it.
Okay, well, I'll talk about 75 then, where for the second time in 7 years, Missouri just demolished Bear Bryant. Missouri had two wins over Bear Bryant's Alabama team that almost nobody else could duplicate. Just whooped them, and of course, in pure 70s fashion, after whooping them, giving them their only loss of the year, they went 6-5 that year.
Probably lost to Haskell or something.
I believe so, actually, yeah. Grinnell College, actually.
There you go.
So the next matchup, 1969, the play-in winner, Mizzou 40, Michigan 17, versus 1972, Mizzou 30, Notre Dame 26. Here's what you need to know. 69.
That's all you need to know, 69.
That was Bo Schembechler's first team. They ended up beating Ohio State and making the Rose Bowl. Missouri crushed them in the Big House the first month of the season. 72 against Notre Dame, the significance of that game. They had just lost to Nebraska 62-0, then had to go to South Bend where they beat a top 10 team. That was kind of the first Al Onofrio special, the first huge upset for him. All right, 68, Mizzou 35, Alabama 10 in the Gator Bowl. Versus 69, Mizzou 69, Kansas 21.
I don't even know that this one's going to be a contest, really.
Yeah, and it's really not fair because 68 was, that was, again, they just crushed Bear Bryant's Alabama team, embarrassed them, outrushed them, I think, 150-30, if I remember correctly. They just, nobody did to Bear Bryant's teams what Dan Devine's team did that year. And then, of course, 69, the most famous thing about the Mizzou-Kansas game that year, that was a game where the Kansas coach said after the game, it was getting so bad that late in the game, he offered Dan Devine a peace sign, and Dan Devine returned half of it.
Yeah.
Which, that was a nice little just smoke where they turn around, went to the Orange Bowl, and got beat by Penn State. Screw Joe Paterno. Screw him!
Oh, hey.
All right, final matchup of that region, 1965 Sugar Bowl. Mizzou 20, Florida 18, versus 1973, Mizzou 13, Nebraska 12. The 73 game, of course, the year after losing to Nebraska 62-0.
That was the last time we've beaten them at home.
At home, right. Because they beat them in Lincoln in 74, 76, and 78.
Right.
So, yeah, we actually went 30 years between home wins and road wins, oddly. 65, that was a game, Steve Spurrier, Heisman Steve Spurrier, Mizzou goes up 20-0, excuse me, and then holds on for dear life.
Well, because they had just created Gatorade.
That's right. No, they created it because of this.
Yeah.
Maybe, sure. Maybe. Okay, pre-1963, really, if we're being honest, this region should have about half of the wins.
Yeah.
But we just, you know, none of us were alive then, so we can't really speak to it.
There's still some good ones in there.
Oh, yeah. First matchup, 1939, Mizzou 20, New York University 7, versus 61 Orange Bowl, I guess, Mizzou 21, Navy 14.
And, you know, this is a tough one because Mizzou winning, you know, at Yankee Stadium, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge in from just a pure, you know, historical perspective, but I don't know how you go against the game against Bolino in the Orange Bowl there.
Yeah, where they technically finished off an undefeated season, even though they had lost.
Right.
Yeah, the 39 game, you know, New York wasn't extremely good that year, but they were supposed to be better than they had the last couple. But it was Yankee Stadium. They got a week's coverage in the New York Times about this fancy Midwestern offense led by Paul Chrisman, who came in and, let's face it, in 1939, 20 points was a ton of points.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the next matchup, 1940.
As evidenced by the 1942 score.
Correct, 1942. Missouri 7, Iowa pre-flight nothing versus 48, Mizzou 20, SMU 14.
What did Iowa pre-flight become?
Well, Bob Brague is the reason I put this one in here. His great old Mizzou book explained to me what Iowa pre-flight were. They were a military all-star team. They had, like, former college All-Americans and some former pros, you know, who were enlisted in the armed forces, basically went around the Midwest crushing Big Ten and Big Eight teams, or Big Six teams, I guess.
It's like Big Six and Big Nine teams.
Yeah. But, yeah, they beat, I believe, they beat Kansas 61-0. They beat Nebraska 46-0. And in Don Froh's last pre-war game before he enlisted in the war in the Army himself, they upset this team 7-0. Bob Stuber rushed for a touchdown, and then they just destroyed them on defense the whole game. So that's one of those, I had never heard anything about this win, but really, that is more impressive than just about anything else they've ever done.
Who was on that 48 SMU team? Somebody.
That would be Doak Walker.
Right, I figured it was somebody like that.
Yeah, he, that was another game, kind of like the Spurrier game, where they went up early and then just held on for dear life at the end. But a huge win there. They really were a good program in the 40s, both Missouri and SMU. Next matchup, 1941, Missouri 28, Oklahoma nothing, versus 1956, Mizzou 15, Kansas 13. I will say this.
Is that the last time we beat Oklahoma in football? I'm not sure.
Yeah, pretty much. see, you just ruined my night. Thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah, that game clinched the conference title for Missouri. That was the year Don Froh unveiled the split T. And just fooled the crap out of pretty much everybody because there really wasn't any such thing as film study then. So it was just a sneak attack from game to game. Rolled through the schedule after not unveiling the split T until halfway through the Ohio State game when they were already losing big. That was their only regular season loss that year. The 56 game, actually, that was a mediocre Missouri team beating a mediocre Kansas team, but it produced one of the most famous Missouri pictures of all time, Don Froh getting carried off the field in his final game.
And that's worthy in and
of itself. Yeah. Final game of the greatest win tournament, final first round game. 1939, Missouri 7, Oklahoma 6, versus 1960, Mizzou 21, Penn State 8. I don't think Joe Paterno was the coach in 1960.
He probably would have been an assistant, however.
Yeah. That was,
I say that seriously. I imagine he was an assistant at that point.
Yeah. Well, in that game, with Paterno on the sideline somewhere, that was kind of Missouri's first statement in 1960 that they were for real. Kind of like whooping Michigan early in 69. The 39 Mizzou 7 Oklahoma 6 game, another kind of conference title game where they wrapped up really the best 3-year span, but they kickstarted the best 3-year span in Missouri history, really, from 39, 40, and 41. But so yeah. In exactly, 44 minutes.
Oh, God.
That is your rundown of the matchups you will be seeing over the next month, really, of this tournament. It is, I mean, the reason I thought about doing this, the reason I've committed myself to eventually over, 25 years writing this Missouri football history book, is that there just are a lot of moments that the casual Missouri fan doesn't necessarily know about. And really it's because of that dark period from the mid-80s through the mid-90s and then again at the early part of this decade, really kind of wiped the slate clean a little bit. But the 40s, the 60s were huge. Missouri was a huge program. 70s, they weren't huge, but they sure beat everybody that has lost to Iowa State and Kansas every year. there are just sort of so many great moments in Missouri history, and that's kind of the, we have a relatively young audience. It's time to get some edumacation going.
That's right. All right, for the very quick all sports report, really an all golf report, if any of you were online today, we were following Mizzou future sophomore Jace Long in his quest at the United States Amateur Public Links Championship. Long came through the first two rounds of stroke play, actually seeded third. He won yesterday, two up, winning on went one up through 17, winning the 18th to win two up. Today, winning his first in 19 holes, moved on to the Sweet 16 against a very impressive golfer, 14-seeded Sang Yi, who had destroyed his first two opponents. They went to the 17th hole all square. Score tracker kind of screwed me a little bit. They had originally showed that both of them bogeyed the hole to go all square to 18th. That was not, in fact, the case. Long had bogeyed 17, could not get it back at 18, and loses one down to Lee. But still a very impressive performance by somebody who came into the program this past year fairly highly acclaimed and just didn't earn the chance to participate very much. And with a bunch of seniors graduating, he's going to be somebody that Mizzou men's golf, and we'll certainly get to them in the review and preview in a couple of Mondays. He's somebody that they're really going to need. From a women's golf standpoint, Julia Potter, the two-time defending champion of the Indiana State Amateur, finished as the runner-up this past year, could not defend her title. Fellow Tiger Michelle Morgan finished in a tie for seventh place, as evidently we own the state of Indiana. But some news there, as well as just a reminder tonight, later on, if any of you have the NBA TV channel, you will be able to watch Damari Carroll at 9:30 p.m. Central Time as he participates against the LA Clippers, while Leo Lyons at 9 p.m. Central Time will be playing against Dallas for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They will also play again tomorrow, Cleveland, that is, at 3 p.m. Central, while, Damari finishes out with two games on Saturday against Phoenix at 7 p.m., and then against San Antonio at 7 p.m. as well to finish the Summer League participation. Both have done well so far. Leo certainly needs to have a big two games to finish to really show that he is worthy potentially of a roster spot.
He would be kind of potentially a decent weapon on the Cavs because he definitely wouldn't be counted on to start. But I mean, really, it seems like so far this summer he's proven that he can be kind of instant offense type, even if his defense, kind of lacks.
Yeah, and to go back, because this came out actually after I finished. The Mizzou men's swimming team did finish their recruiting class, and it was ranked 17th in the country, which gives Mizzou two top 20 recruiting classes in swimming, as the women's swimming recruiting class, bolstered by the fact that they got a huge transfer from the University of Washington, who unfortunately had to cease their program due to budget cuts, and that class was eventually, I believe, ranked 11th. So good things happening in the pool for the Tigers, and that right there is your mid-July all-sports report.
I should also point out that Seth has been doing double duty. He posted a couple comments on the Golf Open thread while podcasting.
Yeah, so I do what I can for the people of Rock Camp.
You win the prize for the day.
But right now I'm out of beer, so it's time to end this sucker.
And it's also almost 50 minutes, and that's also time to end this sucker. Cool. The fastest 50 minutes in podcasting wraps up. I'm sure we will do some more of these in August. It's kind of a preseason preview thing. Get Ross back involved. He's been smoked by classes this summer, it seems like.
Damn kids
and their classes. So, yeah, we will look forward to kicking up the podcast machine again then. But for now, we'll send you out once again to Brass Bonanza, unless there's something else we can think of that's better. No, I think Reunited at the beginning kind of set the tone just right. We'll go out to Brass Bonanza. We'll see you guys. We'll talk to you guys in August.
Peace.